It's happy seat.
It's half past eight, New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike invites you to try your wits against the wits of its experts. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. And if your question stumps us, you get $25 more plus a 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid, and all questions become the property of Information Please. And now light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, the literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, Information Please continues in its happy-go-lucky and completely spontaneous manner. And tonight, the sports expert John Kieran and the New York Post's conning tower man, Franklin P. Adams, retain their regular positions. That means we have two guests. One, the Honorable James Wallace of the New York Court of General Sessions, has been with us before, and we're very glad to welcome him back. The other is a newcomer to this program, and he needs no introduction whatsoever to any American citizen, the Honorable Alfred E. Smith. Now, gentlemen and ladies, remember, for every question missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. We're off with the first question, which comes to us from Miss Mary E. Coppell of Geneva, Illinois. I'm going to read three lines, one after the other, as is my custom. And I'm going to ask you to complete the lines and name the authors. Here's the first. And when, responding to the cheers, he lightly doffed his hat, we have several hands. Mr. Adams.
No stranger in the crowd could doubt was Casey at the bat.
Attaboy. Very good. And I believe, Judge, you were about to say the same thing.
Yes.
Good enough.
Gentleman
now,
Thayer was the author, I believe.
Who is the author, Judge?
Thayer.
Thayer is quite right.
You mean Ernest L. Thayer? Why don't you say so?
Time is precious on this program.
Not to you, apparently, Judge. Now, let us go on to the second one. Here, Skug lies snug. How does it go on? Mr. Adams again.
As a bug in a rug.
Attaboy. And who said it?
Anon.
Oh, no. Oh. You have to give me the author. The author, gentlemen? Who is the author?
I don't know.
Same mistake. The author is Benjamin Franklin. What did you say, Mr. Kieran?
Mrs. Skug.
It was Benjamin Franklin in a letter to one of his female correspondents. And I don't know whether he invented the phrase or not, but the phrase has become famous since his time. That's one wrong. Now get the next one right, or we lose $25. Go. Your lover lives, said Cromwell. Mr. Smith.
Curfew shall not ring tonight.
Attaboy. That's fine. And, Mr. Smith, who wrote it? That's not so easy. Mr. Kieran?
Rose Hartwick Thorpe.
Attaboy. That's very good. Thank you for helping out the governor. That gives us 2 out of 3. And sends us on to the question, the next one, from S. Bleeker of New Boston, Massachusetts. Again, yet 2 out of 3. Now, I'm going to ask you to name the man who is being offered as a presidential nominee in each of these imaginary speeches that we've made up. I'm going to deliver them, and you have to name the man at the end of my speech. Here we go. They were all presidents. Now, here we go. The Buckeye State is proud to offer in nomination a man who has ably served his state and nation as a judge, a governor of the Philippines, and as Secretary of War. I give you Mr. Adams.
William Howard Taft.
Not the slightest doubt of it. Very good. Now the next one. The Empire State offers to this great convention a man distinguished as a sheriff of the great Erie County, mayor of the Bison City, and governor of the largest state in the Union. I give you Judge Wallace.
Grover Cleveland.
Grover Cleveland. I had 4 hands up. Everybody knew the answer there. Now how about this one? The Bay State is happy to present to this convention a native son who has served as member of both houses of the state legislature and president of the upper house, lieutenant governor and governor, and who emerged as a national leader from a grave emergency that challenged the hub. I give you Mr.
Calvin Coolidge.
All right, Mr. Adams, Mr. Kieran, and the judge, and Mr. Smith. Calvin Coolidge is right. Too easy. Not enough presidents.
I'm referring to the...
I see. I just wanted to get you right.
The mechanical one, Mr. Patton.
Now, gentlemen, here is something a little harder. This comes from Samuel H. Monk of Memphis, Tennessee, and again gets 2 out of 3. From what source is each of these titles derived? They're titles of books or plays or movies. Tell me what they come from. The first is Once Aboard the Lugger. It's a novel by A.S.M. Hutchinson. Mr. Adams.
And the girl is mine.
And a boy.
But hockey, no violence.
Oh, you know the rest of it. Oh, there you go. And Mr. Adams and Judge Wallace, what's it from? What's the source of the line?
I think it's from some old melodrama.
Yes?
What? I don't know.
Is that the name of it? What? You don't know?
What melodrama?
Escapes me. Black-Eyed Susan.
No. I think you have to give me the source. Otherwise, I have to mark you wrong. It's from a play by an old melodrama writer, Dion Boucicault. Boucicault, Mr. Smith?
The Shark Run.
That's right. Any particular reason?
Yes, I played Curry Kinsella.
All right, we'll call that right. An assist from the governor. Now, how about this one? It's a bestseller of the present moment by Eric Knight called This Above All. What's the source? Mr. Kieran.
This above all, to thine own self be true, and it must follow as the night to day, etc.
Yes.
Polonius to Laertes.
Yes. In the play?
Hamlet.
In the play Hamlet. That's a perfect answer. And how about this one? This is a movie, I think. Strawberry Blonde. Strawberry Blonde? What's it from? Mr. Adams.
Casey would waltz with the Strawberry Blonde.
That's right. Do you know how it goes on?
And the band played on in the name of the song.
And the band played on. Very good. I don't think a great many people knew that. The judge had his hand up and probably is going to say the same thing.
Any child would
know. Oh, yeah.
So how do you have to know it, then, Mr. Adams?
Right?
How about this one from E. Irving Stewart of Portland, Oregon? Again, get 2 out of 3. This is something about our own profession, Mr. Adams, which is the profession of radio. Identify these firsts in broadcast. What was the first broadcast of a presidential convention? When and what was the occasion? Mr. Smith.
1924.
That's absolutely right. What was the occasion, Mr. Smith?
Democratic National Convention at Madison Square Garden.
And Madison Square Garden, and who was nominated at that time?
John W. Davis.
John W. Davis. And is that the famous convention in which Al Obama cast 24 votes for Underwood?
Was that the one? That was in the time that Woodrow Wilson was nominated. That was the same convention.
That's the same convention.
Stop fighting, gentlemen.
Same convention.
I think I will defer to the governor, Judge, if you don't mind. I think that phrase did become famous, as the governor reminds us, in 1924.
I remember hearing it when Woodrow Wilson was nominated, and I'll stick to my story.
All right, now you stick to it. We don't mind. How about this one? The first broadcast of a heavyweight championship fight. The first broadcast of a heavyweight championship fight. What one? Mr. Smith.
Foipo.
No, guess not. That'd be wrong. Any guesses now? As long as we're wrong, we're steering.
I'll guess it was Boyle's 30 Acres, Dempsey against Carpentier.
Why didn't you say that before, Mr. Kieran, before Mr. Smith opened his mouth?
As a matter of fact, I know. I know somebody who worked on the broadcast.
Yes. Who was the broadcaster at that time? Do you remember?
Major Andrew White.
That's
perhaps.
Exactly right, Mr. Kieran. That's pretty... I'm surprised. You have a very good memory, Mr. Kieran. Nevertheless, I'll have to count that wrong. Because Mr. Smith came in first with a slightly wrong answer. Now, how about this one? What was the first broadcast of a presidential address to the people? The first broadcast of a presidential address to the people of the United States. I think these are interesting facts. Any guesses? How about it, Mr. Chair?
I guess Woodrow Wilson.
No, that would be wrong. Warren Harding, in June 1923, spoke to the citizenry about the World Court for the first time over the air. And that, I think, will send $25 to Mr. Stewart, plus a copy of the Britannica, courtesy of Lucky Strike, and will send us on to the next question from Mrs. Marie Van Sant of Absecon, New Jersey. Again, get 2 out of 3. If these lines of song or poetry that I'm going to read should inspire you to plant a garden, what flowers would bloom in it? And here is the first set of lines. Tell them, dear, that if eyes were made for seeing, then beauty is its own excuse for being. Miss Kieran.
Rhodora.
Rhodora. What's the reference?
To a Rhodora.
To a Rhodora. What is a Rhodora, Miss Kieran?
Well, it's, as a matter of fact, I haven't seen it in a while, so I can't give you a very...
You're rather snobbish. Unless you see it in the wild, you don't recognize it. Is it anything like a rhododendron? It sounds as if it would be.
No, I believe it's much smaller than a rhododendron.
And the lines, as Mr. Kieran remembered...
Beauty is its own excuse for being.
That's right. Very few people, I think, would know that. It's a poem by Ralph Waldo Emerson. How about this one? And it was nothing more. What flower does that recall to you, Mr. Adams?
A primrose.
A primrose. Can you give us the lines?
By the river's
brim. A primrose by a river's brim.
Yes.
A simple yellow primrose was to him, and it was nothing more.
Yes. Who wrote the lines?
Wordsworth.
Wordsworth. That's right. A
primrose. Peter Bell.
Now we have, that's absolutely right, Mr. Adams. That gives us Rhodora and Primrose in our small garden. Here's the last one. Silently, one by one, in the infinite meadows of heaven, blossom the lovely stars. Mr. Adams again.
Forget me nots of the angels.
Perfect, Mr. Adams. That's very good. Very good. What's it from?
Evangeline.
Yes, by whom?
H.W. Longfellow.
Thought I'd catch you there, Mr. Adams. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Now, how about this one? This comes from Frank Garitano of Bridgeport, Connecticut. There is a rumor current, by the way, that at least three of the gentlemen now serving as experts have some slight ability as harmonizers. We intend to kill that rumor immediately. This question involves a test of your expertness in harmonizing. I'm going to read you a group of songs, just the titles, four of them, and you can select one that the four of you will agree you're going to sing. When you've made a selection, you have to sing as a quartet in harmony. Now, we have dragged down tonight the Honorable Dean Taylor and the Honorable Oscar Levant to act as judges in this harmonizing contest. And if they say you're good, well, hard to know what to say. If they say you're bad, we lose $25 instead of the Britannic. Now, here are four songs.
Do they get the... they share in the...
They don't get a thing out of this. No, they don't get a thing out of it. They are just
like
for the fun.
Fair and impartial jury to me.
Now, which of these four songs would you like to sing, gentlemen? In the Evening by the Moonlight, Sweet Genevieve, Sweet Marie, She Was Bred in Old Kentucky. Judge?
Sweet Marie,
Smith?
She Was Bred in Old Kentucky.
How about you?
Mr. Kieran? Do you care?
In the Evening by the Moonlight.
How about She Was Bred...
She Was
Bred in Old Kentucky. All right, I'll have the pianist give you the key.
Yeah, just the chorus.
Just the chorus, gentlemen. Get set on your mark.
She was bred in the middle grasses blue, when the sunshine of the country in her face and meadow too. She was bred in Old Kentucky, in her land you're mighty lucky. When you marry her, why
that was remarkable.
You know, there's a parody on that.
Don't sing it.
She was bred in Old Kentucky. She was pie in New Orleans. But in Boston, she was only pork and beans.
Didn't expect to get the added grace notes, Mr. Smith. And now, Justice Levant and Justice Taylor, what is your opinion?
Well,
yes or no?
Don't shilly or shout.
Well, candidly, I think it stands alone. it has no bass.
Has no what?
No bass.
Oh, no, you didn't hear that?
No, heard no bass
you
at all. No, it's all first baritone and tenor.
What's your opinion, Mr.
Well, there's no predominance of boy soprano there either. I thought it was rather distinguished in the grand manner, and in the pool room grand manner.
Would you pass these gentlemen over to the band?
It was long before our judgment. The audience passed, and so did we.
Oh, it's up to you. How about it, Taylor?
I stand alone against the audience.
Well, I've got a division of opinion. The audience... I'm not going to allow the audience to judge this. I have a no from Mr. Taylor and a yes from Mr. Levant. Is that
two
right?
Two yeses for me. There's a judge and a governor on that.
In the event of a split jury, which is what we have, I think the only fair thing is to give the $25 and the Britannica to Mr. Frank Garitano, which I will now do. Thank you very much.
I think this Taylor is a red.
Personally, gentlemen, I don't think you're bad. So far, Lucky Strike has paid out, therefore, $50 and two sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And now Mr. Cross does a bit of supposing.
Ladies and gentlemen, suppose you shopped for the tobacco that goes into your cigarettes. Well, at the auctions, you might find the finer, lighter, naturally milder tobaccos, the kind you really enjoy, cost $5, $10, $15 more per 100 pounds. But if you really wanted a milder, better-tasting cigarette, you'd pay the price to get that finer tobacco. Now, that's just what the American Tobacco Company does. For example, last season at Kenbridge, Virginia, American paid 27% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 27% above the average market price paid for all the various types and grades of tobacco sold there. And the best we bought will go to Lucky's. So it goes at market after market. We consistently pay the price to get the finer, steam milder tobaccos. Mr. Fatiman, have I demonstrated that Lucky's do a pretty good job of shopping for their smokers?
Yes, Mr. Cross, and it took you exactly 60 seconds. And now, gentlemen, how about beginning, if you have recovered from your harmonizing, the second half of the program with a question from Michael Walsh of Hollis, Long Island. Mr. Walsh, appropriately enough, has worked out a question involving Irish names. Give four common expressions, gentlemen, that include an Irish name. For example, tell it to Sweeney would be one. Don't give me that back, please. Mr. Adams.
Life of Riley.
Life of Riley is a peach.
Slide Kelly Sly.
I beg your pardon?
Slide Kelly Sly.
Slide Kelly Sly. That gives us two very good ones. How about, Mr. Smith, are you suffering from what might be called Mike Fright, which gives us a third?
I didn't get the question.
Four common expressions, not too common, that include an Irish name. How about it, Mr. Kieran?
Well, you said we couldn't use the life of Sweeney, but they say run for Sweeney. If something runs for Sweeney.
Okay. I'd rather have another one.
Well, I've taken on the Bill Daly. Well,
never heard of him.
That's a racing.
The Life of Riley.
The Life of Riley. I think that was mentioned by Mr. Adams.
Was it? Oh, pardon me. I thought you said the Life of Sweeney.
Mr. Smith, you have your hand up?
Well, I was. That's the one I had in mind.
I see you'd love all like that.
I'm living the Life of Riley.
You certainly are popular.
Because I don't talk loud enough. Never know the old place.
How about Mr. Adams?
Potatoes O'Brien.
Oh, very good. Very good. Potatoes O'Brien is a peach. Mr. Smith.
Casey at the bat.
Well, I wouldn't call it a... Yes, I suppose you could use it as an expression. Sure, that comes up all the time. That gives us four. How about Murphy's, the potatoes?
Murphy's.
Or Maggie Murphy's home.
All right, Mr. Smith.
How about Standing Pat?
Okay, and I'll end on that.
How about Pat Pending, the inventor?
Oh, getting worse and worse. How about this one from Marie T. Slicer of Alexandria, Virginia? Get two out of three. Come to your senses, Mr. Adams. Gentlemen, who signs the president's paycheck? The president of the United States. Who signs the president's paycheck? Mr. Smith?
Controller.
No, I think that would be wrong. Mr. Adams?
The Treasurer of the United States.
Who is that, Mr. Adams?
I've no idea, but that's, he signs the Army checks, too.
Yes, he does, but we have
to... Oh, the difference to me.
Mr. Kieran.
I don't know whether he still holds the job, but there's a man named Burke held it at one time.
No, the present holder of the Office of Treasurer, who signs the President's check, is William A. Julian.
Oh, yeah, way, that's right.
How much does the... by the way, how much does the President get for his services, Mr. Smith?
$75,000.
Yes, and underpaid, wouldn't you say?
Very much.
Yes. All right, that settles that. We'll see if we can fix it up. Does the president pay an income tax? Does it, Mr. Smith?
Yes.
He does indeed. Is the vice president, gentlemen, a member of the cabinet? Is the vice president, Mr. Smith?
No.
He is not. That gives us 3 out of 3. Thank you very much. 2 out of 3. Thank you, Mr. Smith. And how about this one from Joseph Israels of this city, New York City? Get 2 out of 3. Identify these famous military organizations, which are fictitious. They're imaginary ones, but they're famous nevertheless. The first is the Mulligan Guards. Judge Wallace.
Well, the Mulligan Guards were Harrigan and Hart's creation.
Who were Harrigan and Hart?
Harrigan
That's quite correct.
Harrigan and Hart were two very celebrated actors, singers, entertainers of 30 or 40 years ago.
Yes.
Mr. Harrigan had a couple of theaters, and Tony Hart was his partner.
Yes. And
children are still on the stage.
That gives us a complete story. That's right. Thank you, Judge. That was the subtitle of a series of plays, The Mulligan Guards. Now, how about the Horse Marines? The Horse Marines. Mr. Smith.
Captain Jinx.
Captain Jinx of the Horse Marines. And can you tell us anything about that famous melodrama, Mr. Smith? Who wrote it, for one? Can you? Or who starred in it?
I know Ethel Barrymore.
Who did, Judge?
Ethel Barrymore.
Ethel Barrymore, yes.
But she wasn't the first. I can't recall who the
No, it was her first starring vehicle.
It was her first starring vehicle.
And who wrote it? Mr. Adams, any idea? Well, it's Clyde Fitch.
Clyde Fitch.
Clyde Fitch. Now, how about this? The Baker Street Irregulars. And you identify them. Mr. Kieran.
The Baker Street Irregulars were Sherlock Holmes' auxiliary force.
What do they consist of? What were
they? Street Arabs.
Street Arabs, yes. And doesn't it also, isn't there a club of that name?
Club with Christopher Morley.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Our old friend Christopher Morley is one of the irregulars.
Plus 3 hours for lunch.
And don't grab the check. From T.A. Shaheen of Groton, Massachusetts, comes this one. Get two out of three, if you can.
Groton, please.
Groton.
Oh, Groton, of course, Groton. I was going to change the town. Groton, Massachusetts. What oaths taken by groups or individuals contain these pledges of loyalty? Here's the first. And that I take this obligation freely and without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion. What oath is that?
An oath of a citizen of the United States.
Yes, that's the final citizenship oath for United States citizenship. That's quite right, Judge. Now, how about this one? That you will lead your lives and practice your art in uprightness and honor. From what oath is that? Judge Wallace.
That's the doctor's oath.
Yes.
Hippolytius.
I don't...
Hippocratic oath.
The Hippocratic oath, as Mr. Kieran reminds
me. You put me wrong.
Yeah, taken by doctors.
Coming in with your
Mr. Kieran, about how old is that oath? How far back does it go?
I believe that is around 300-400 B.C.
Yes, it's something like that. So it is one of the oldest oaths on record and one of the most venerated. And here is the third and last oath. For better or for worse. Oh, we have any number of hands. I have two hands from the Honorable Alfred E. Smith. Mr. Smith.
Marriage.
Marriage oath, yes.
I think that's wrong. I think it's for better or for worse.
For better, comma, for worse?
Yes.
As if you're going to
an orange.
As if you're going to get both, whether you knew it or not.
No, I think that's just the way it works.
How about that, Governor? Is it for better or for worse?
For better or for worse.
I believe so. Yes, for better or for worse, which
in
gives everything.
In sickness or in health.
Yes, that's right. Till death do us part.
I do.
It's going to be very hard to keep the judge down. I can see that. Do you want to sing, Judge?
We have a song. Do you take this one right. For your lawful wife?
Watch. If you want to sing, I have a question for you. This comes from M. Kurtz of New York City. Here we have. I'm going to give you a characteristic phrase from an old time song. There are going to be three of them all together. And you'll
no
prove...
This time, huh?
Oh, yes, plenty of it, so to speak. You'll prove that you recognize the song by singing part of the chorus. A few lines of it. And here's the first phrase. Independent air. Now, can you stop it? I'll give you the key. How about the... Mr. Adams, what one is that? Well, can we get a few lines from you?
Guys? As I walk along, the boy belongs with an independent air. You can hear the girls declare he must be a millionaire. You can hear them sigh and wish to die. And see them wink the other eye. The man who broke the bank at Monte Carlo.
And one of the pleasantest things about that rendition is that on the last note, I couldn't see the faces of either one of you. How about this one? The Game of a Woman's Heart. What's it from, Judge?
The Moth and the Flame.
Would you like to sing a bit of that?
Second.
All right.
The Moth and the Flame played a game one day. It was the game of a woman's heart. But the moth, they say, was a maiden gay. The flame was a bad man's art. But the moth never knew, as so near she flew, that the flame was the light of shame. But she fluttered away just in time, so they say.
Attaboy, Adams.
That's the tale of the moth. And the flame.
Very good. Thank you, Judge. Thank you, Mr. Adams. Thank you, Mr. Smith. I think that's all we'll have time for on that particular one. That gives us two anyway. Now, how about this one? This comes from Harry Bastido of Freehold, New Jersey. Get two out of three if you can. If the president's calendar for a day, this is the president of the United States, if the president's calendar for a day included interviews about the following subject, whom would he probably be consulting? Now, the first subject has to do with limiting the prices of commodities. With whom would he be speaking in that case? Mr. Kieran?
I'd say Mr. Henderson.
Yes, Mr. Leon Henderson. What's his office, Mr. Kieran?
He's a price fixer.
Gee, how did you guess that? Do any of you know the exact office that Mr. Henderson holds? Mr. Smith? I can never remember all those initials.
Price Control.
Office of Price something and Civilian Supply, I think. Something like that. Now, how about this one? Preventing violation of the antitrust. Talking to someone about that. With whom would he be speaking? Mr. Smith.
Attorney General.
Solicitor General, who would that be in this case?
Biddle. Mr. Biddle. Biddle, no. No. Unless he's been promoted.
Solicitor General would be whom?
Francis Biddle is the Solicitor General.
I guess that's right. I
Jackson thought... was until he was appointed, unless he's been confirmed the Attorney General.
I thought it would be Mr. Thurman Arnold. What would you say, Mr.
Well, Thurman Arnold is the one who has been handling it.
Thurman Arnold is one of the
Assistants?
Assistants.
Well, he might then consult either of those. Now, how about a discussion of the enforcement of the Draft Act? With whom would the President confer in that case? Discussion of the enforcement of the Draft Act.
Well,
Judge?
You mean the head of the draft board? Well,
who would that be? Who is in charge of the draft? Oh, it's a name that's been in all the papers lately.
Hershey?
Yes. Brigadier General Lewis Hershey. That gives us 3 out of 3. Not, however, a very difficult question, I think.
Justin, what do you smoke? Well, the average person will answer with the name of a cigarette. But, you know, that's not nearly enough for a complete answer. Ladies and gentlemen, can you tell me the kind of tobacco your cigarette contains? Is it the milder, better-tasting leaf? Is it the kind of tobacco that brings a higher price at the auctions because it has the quality smokers prefer? If you're a Lucky Strike smoker, you can answer yes to all these questions. For we bring you the actual reports from tobacco markets proving that the American Tobacco Company pays the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder leaf. For example, 22% more than the market average last season at Greensburg, Kentucky. 34% more at Asheville, North Carolina. So it goes at market after market. And the best we buy goes into Lucky's. Is it any wonder that with independent tobacco experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1. Decide now to make that next package of cigarettes you buy Lucky Strike.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. Now, Taylor, I mustn't forget them. Next week, Mr. Levant, Mr. Kieran, and Mr. Adams will be batting them out as usual. And our guest of the evening will be Alfred Hitchcock, the world-famous motion picture director, who's directed such pictures as The 39 Steps, Rebecca, and The Lady Vanishers, and others. Remember, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets the sum of $10. Now, if the question should happen to stump our experts, which does happen on occasion, you not only get $25 more, but in addition, the complete 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Remember to send your letters with questions and also the correct answers to Information, please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now, a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs, famous tobacco auctioneer from Goldsboro, North Carolina.
And that chant, ladies and gentlemen, is just another way of saying that if you haven't tried a Lucky lately, you don't...
This is the National Broadcasting Company.